It's a man's world. You've heard that expression before. Some women have been pushing back against that notion for decades. In an era when unprecedented political and economic change has rocked the world, the challenge for some has always been to make sure that women benefit as well as men. Irene Tinker has been all about that, watching and writing about this for a very long time. She's founder of the International Center for Research on Women and the Equity Policy Center, and she was a delegate to the UN Commission on the Status of Women. She was a professor at the University of California at Berkeley. She's written many books and co-edited another, Developing Power, How Women Transformed International Development. Her latest book, Visioning an Equitable World, Reflections on Women, Democracy, Education, and Economic Development, an intellectual memoir. Our conversation comes on the eve of Women's Equality Day, which commemorates passage of the 19th Amendment back in 1920, allowing women to vote. Irene Tinker will be speaking at the library tonight. And Irene, what a pleasure to have you here. Welcome to Kansas City.
Thank you very much.
In your contribution to this book, Developing Power, it came out more than a decade ago. You talk about your determination to study how many women were really making money around the globe, and you wound up studying street foods, a term that you wound up coining. What are street foods, and what did you find out?
Well, street foods is any food that's sold on the street. And before that, when people were looking at what was sold on the street, they looked at popcorn or peanuts or something and thought of them as snack food.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, if anyone has traveled, especially in Southeast Asia, which I have, you know that there's whole foods being sold. And so at a time when we were trying to find out how women actually made money, as opposed to middle-class ideas that women all sewed and knit, and which, of course, isn't true in most countries, we decided with this Equity Policy Center to study how women really made money.
And what did you find out?
Well, we found out in a study of actually seven countries over a whole 15 months each that, first of all, women made a lot of money. Secondly, in many countries, they made more money than their husbands.
Huh.
For example, in Thailand, they made more money than the men in the military and many civil servants. So you found that it was a very high level, very high kind of work to do.
Were you surprised by those findings, that women were doing as well as they were?
Well, it's really very uneven. We did these studies where we could get support, which, if you know anything about soft money, is not always easy. We did one of the studies in Bangladesh, which is one of the more conservative countries in the world, and they don't really allow women to sell on the street. But we found out that 46% more or less of the street foods work was done by women in the house or helping to sell or help to clean up. And that was really quite astounding because the men couldn't have done it without the women.
Well, you set out, if I understand correctly, to improve the incomes of women.
Well, the idea originally was to look at what they were making. But since no one else had done the study, we had to do a study of the men as well as the women.
Mm-hmm.
And so we also looked at the children. So it was really a study of everyone who sold the food. And then, of course, the question was, how safe is the food? So we ended up looking both at how their income came in and how safe was the food. And at that point, this was the Food and Agriculture Organization was trying to close down street foods on the argument that they were all dirty. And
you found what?
We found that, in fact, street foods were often cleaner than small restaurants.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because the small restaurants, people don't wash their hands.
Yeah.
Things, all the things we know. And in street foods, the people who buy the food are the same kinds of people who are selling the food, and they know how to take care of it. For example, if you're getting a breakfast cereal in Nigeria, you take your own bowl and your own spoon, so you don't have to eat out of the common pot.
So were you able then to preserve street food in several countries to preserve that income stream for the women you were set out to look at here?
We actually were able to change the whole approach that FAO took. They decided that street foods was a useful thing to do, so they began to train the street food vendors.
Yeah.
They began to organize them.
Hmm.
And they began to teach them how to improve the safety. And we found that I went back to all of the countries we'd studied after 5 to 10 years to look at what had happened. And in most cases, the incomes had improved extremely much, and further, the safety of the food by having little pods, sort of having the same thing we have in supermarkets where all the vendors come together and they provide the clean water, which is the main problem.
Yeah.
Then it was quite possible for them to increase the money.
Well, you've been watching and gauging the role of women around the globe for a good number of years, Irene. And I'm wondering, just broadly speaking, how satisfied are you with progress that you've seen or the lack of it?
Well, it's always this question of half full, half empty.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've had...
What mood are you in today, half full or half empty?
Oh, half more than half full. I think that the point is that every time you make a successful change, it has sometimes unexpected and often detrimental impact.
For example?
Well, for example, if... For example, you caught me on that one.
That's what talk show hosts do, Irene.
Yeah. Well, I know you do, and I should know this off the top of my head. When you increase the income of the women in many countries, the men get jealous.
Ah.
And in some of the countries, the men would actually take over the women's industries. And so
progress for women gets halted or diverted in some
way. Well, then we began to understand that in many cases you have to look at the family. Mm-hmm. And I think especially American feminists kind of forgot the idea that most women live in a family and they do what they do to support the family. And this is a very important concept, which I think got left out at some of the earliest stages.
Well, if you had known 60 years ago that we would be at this point with women's rights and equality in 2016, would you have been satisfied?
I'm really impressed with how wonderful the greater equality of women, where we're about, I hope, to have a new woman president, which would have been unprecedented not very long ago.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to that, it's very difficult in any country for the men to reestablish the patriarchy that they had before.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's one of the things that the right-wing Islamists are trying to do. And that's because I think they're so jealous of the fact that they're losing control of the women.
Hmm.
Because, in fact, most patriarchal societies treated women like slaves or something to be owned or taken, beaten up or so on. I mean, until recently in many countries, it was still acceptable to beat your wife.
Mm-hmm.
And they even have honor killings. There have been honor killings just the last week or two in Pakistan, where women begin to assert their rights and the men think that this is against the family. And you recall this woman was actually strangled by her her brother. Mm-hmm. And the thing that's different is he's now taken to court.
So there are improvements being made.
There are improvements everywhere. It's just, it's never as fast as you hope, but it's often faster than you think it possible.
So the biggest barriers to tackling gender equality worldwide today would be what?
Well, first of all, gender equality is a very slippery word. Gender means how you were born to socialization. You have a gender. I have a gender. Are we talking about your gender equality or my gender equality?
Mm-hmm.
And this has messed up the whole debate about whether we're talking about women or men. It's a useful analytical tool because it talks about the relationships between men and women, but it is not a very useful term in terms of development or the question you just asked. I think that women are doing incredibly better than men. I think there is now a problem that a lot of the men think they're not doing very well, and you do get a backlash.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you think women are doing better than men just in general across the board?
No, but I think compared to where they were, they're doing a whole lot better.
Yeah.
And the men feel they've lost control in some places.
What's the biggest barrier to equality in this country, as far as you're concerned?
Well, some of it is accepting the fact that women and men can, in fact, do the same things. I was just talking to Courtney on the way in.
From the library.
And the library. And she was saying that one of the biggest problems is daycare.
Mm-hmm.
And now historically, if there was a problem, it was always assumed the woman would stay home. When you have an equal family, you assume that both the man and woman are working. And what she was saying is how hard it is to get daycare.
Yeah, yeah. If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. I'm visiting with an equal rights pioneer, Irene Tinker. She's speaking at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library, the downtown branch at 14 West 10th Street at 6:30 this evening. For more information or to reserve a seat, go to kclibrary.org. You've now come to discard the belief that the world needs men and women to be equal, if I understand right, Irene. You call that goal both undesirable and unobtainable. And you say this: if man is the measure, women will always be second class. That became your mantra, you said. What do you mean by that, that if man is the measure, women will always be second class?
Well, when I first was involved with the women's movement or my own sort of efforts to be equal, I used to kid about the fact that equality to me was having the getting the same ulcer that my husband had. I have a daughter who studied psychology, and she's convinced me, and I totally believe it, that when men and women are born, they are wired differently.
Mm-hmm.
And that we women have some advantages, and the men have advantages. You'll never, in most cases, have a woman as big or as tall or as strong as a man. It's very handy to have a tall, strong man around the house.
Mm-hmm.
But women have other advantages. And so you want to talk about equity, not about equality.
Mm. That's the key.
That's the key.
You've written about this idea, too, Irene, that came out of the Beijing conference, that women should be granted 30% of all seats in elected legislatures. I gather that to mean that women should hold 30 seats in the U.S. Senate and roughly 130 seats in the U.S. House. What do you make of that? Is that where we need to go? Because today, as you know, this struggle, after all this struggle, women hold only 20 of 100 seats in the U.S. Senate and 84 of 435 seats in the House. That's still a long, long way to go to get to 50%.
Well, I did not invent the 30%. That was something that came out of the Beijing conference.
Do you like that idea?
Well, you have to look at what they were looking at. It's very easy to get 30% of the seats if you have a proportional representative list system. You have to look at the electoral system.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for example, in Sweden, everyone talks about how they have almost equal representation. Well, the fact is that they have an electoral system with lists that are closed, so that if on the list you vote for, say it was a social democratic list, every other seat would be woman.
Mm-hmm.
So if you elect that, you get 50%.
I guess what I'm wondering is, do you like using this sort of...
Well, let me finish.
Yeah.
In the United States, we have single constituencies.
That's right.
You couldn't imagine in your own constituency, if I told you that this time you have to elect a woman, everybody'd yell.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't work. So in many ways, when we get women in our legislatures, they are elected because they are strong women, not because they are party members. In Sweden, there is a reaction against the party because they don't think the party stands for women very much.
Mm-hmm.
I've written about that too.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we have here is when you do get women elected, they are elected on the issues that the constituency sends them there. And most of the women are very pro-female.
Mm-hmm.
So in many ways, I think we have a stronger representation in our legislatures than most other countries. Now, the problem in the United States Senate and Congress is distance.
Mm-hmm. Meaning?
We live in Oregon now. In Oregon, I think almost all of our legislators have been divorced at least once because going back and forth is very difficult.
To the legislature and back and forth from home every week. I've seen it many times with my own eyes, Irene.
And so if you look sort of at over the Mississippi River, it's very difficult for the women to combine that.
Mm-hmm.
So what you find is a few successful women who have managed to stay there, have a house husband that will move with them to Washington, D.C., and set up the household there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the people will go back and forth, but, I mean, the woman will, but the family will stay together.
Right. What do you make of this notion that so many women in their 20s and 30s today have such little regard for the historic nature of Hillary Clinton's candidacy, and they know so little of the history of the last 60 years that you've lived through and worked so hard during the course of? That's got to be a little frustrating for you.
Well, I think this has happened very gradually, that the women today just take at advantage, I mean, just assume that they have the right to go to college, that there are no quotas for people and for women in, say, medical school or law school, as there was back in the 60s. And in fact, as we know, there are a majority of women in the medical school now. And now maybe the men want to have some special quotas, who knows. But it's nature. They just assume these things.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I assume when the women start thinking about it. And, you know, frankly, I don't know a single woman, whatever her registration is, who isn't going to vote for Hillary.
Mm-hmm. Is the women's movement dead in this country?
I don't think so. It's just different.
Yeah.
As I said before, you solve some problems, then you need to have new ones. I think right now, if I were organizing, the main thing I'd organize around would be daycare.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems to me that you're never going to have women be able to work equally if there isn't reasonably inexpensive and available daycare near where they work.
Irene Tinker's latest book is Visioning an Equitable World, Reflections on Women, Democracy, Education, and Economic Development. She calls it an intellectual memoir. She'll speak at 6:30 this evening at the Kansas City Public Library, downtown, 14 West 10th Street. More information, kclibrary.org. Irene, what a pleasure to have you here.
Can I say something about my new book?
Yes, briefly.
Briefly. Well, I have written a lot. I've written maybe 81 articles and something like 15 books or edited them. And I wanted to have them available in some kind of organized manner. And so it took me a long time to figure out how to do this. But what I have done is to organize them into 10 categories. And in each of these categories, I have about a 5-page introduction. So if you see this book and you look at it and says, oh, help, it's so long. In fact, if you read just the introductions to the 10 sections,
right,
plus the introduction to the book, it's less than 60 pages, you know what it's about. For example,
I'm going to have to go real quickly here, Irene.
Well, I was going
to giving you a heck of a plug here.
Well, I was going to say that just as an example, it doesn't include my book about crossing centuries, which is a book that my husband and I drove from Mombasa.
I was going to ask you about that.
Back to London, but I had also driven from London to India.
Yes.
In order to find a husband.
And those stories are in the book, right?
Well, the latter story, no, neither of them are, because they're travel stories. They're not academic stories.
Right. I've got to scoot, Irene.
I've
got to go.
They are available on Amazon.
Okay. That's Irene Tinker. Thanks so much for your time, Irene. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you.